So what we've been doing at this class over the last few weeks is to try to introduce to you or to revisit what we describe as our system of practice, the Triratna system of practice. And this is a way of describing the different qualities that are activated by using Buddhist meditation techniques, by reflecting, studying the Dharma, particularly within our tradition. So what it points to is the different processes that our whole being is going to go through, actually on any spiritual journey we choose, but particularly if we are using the consciously activating these systems of Buddhist meditation, of study and reflection. And what we're trying to show in this system is how the different parts of practice relate to each other, how they're actually dependent on each other. So what I'm going to try to do is just to continue this process really of describing why we do what we do in these in our practice. So if you remember, those of you who are here, we were introduced to the whole system by Jivalamani, and then after that, Taranita introduced us to the concept of integration. That sense of gathering ourselves up, gathering the different aspects of our nature into a whole, allowing the hidden elements of our life to become visible to us and in relationship to each other. So on that basis, then, we can really creatively engage with practice and with the Sangha, with our lives. And these integration, really, the practice that really promotes that is the mindfulness of breathing. It is the meditation that attempt to focus, to rest attention on the breath. What that tends to do is reveal to us the bits that actually don't want to play, that want to go away and do something else. So we gradually have to gather ourselves together through the mindfulness of breathing to just rest fully in our experience with all that we are, with all these different parts of our being. And then we moved on from that. Karunavarpi last week was exploring positive emotion. And this is obviously linked to the Metta-Bhavana practice, and Karunavarpi particularly focused on compassion. Compassion, which is metta, meeting suffering, then the natural response of metta, the active element of it, is this flow of compassion. And tonight I'm going to be saying something about spiritual death, and this also has its own meditation practices associated with it. So we have what's called the six element practice, and also specific contemplations on different elements of the Buddhist teachings. And these aren't usually taught in these sorts of situations. They're really only taught on retreat. Really, because we need to be really established in positive emotion and integration to really be able to make use of the meditation practices of that will, in a way, stimulate this sense of spiritual death. So I'm going to be talking about spiritual death tonight, and then we're going to be, in the next two sessions, we'll be looking at spiritual rebirth, which is obviously the follows naturally out of the death, and also receptivity. So these different aspects of practice, they come to the fore, even encouraged at different phases of our involvement in the Triratna movement, the Triratna order. But it's important to recognise that these practices, they don't just happen once. They're actually something that happens to us over and over again. So I'm sure we recognise that for instance, positive emotion. It's something that we can, we know some of the time, and it goes. And we feel whole, complete, and then we feel very fragmented, very tussling with different parts of our nature. So all of these factors, all these elements of practice, are in a constant ebb and flow. And they're all actually influencing each other. They're all reopening each other. If we go into one practice, it will naturally give rise to another aspect of practice. So they are a whole, and they can also be seen as separate aspects. So we have, just to say again, integration, positive emotion, spiritual death, spiritual rebirth, and receptivity. And these are the core responses that can be activated through specific meditations, but perhaps more importantly, they're qualities of being, psychic processes that will emerge naturally by engaging with practice. These are natural processes which are actually in potential in all human life. All human life goes through these different phases, or certainly has access to them. But what's different about here, in this situation, is that we're consciously stimulating these different aspects into being. We're actually meditating, studying, reflecting to consciously develop these factors. Because there's an intention here of maturing, of becoming fully human, of living our potential. So the clearer we are about the territory that we're trying to enter or evoke through our practice, then the more skillfully we'll be able to engage with it and skillfully know the territory, really. So this is really what we're doing in these series of talks, is just laying out the territory of practice. And I feel it's a duty of care, actually. It's a kind of... this is saying to you, this is what you're being invited into. You know, this is what you're taking on. This is what we're encouraging you to do. So tonight I'm going to be focusing on spiritual death. And this is the quality of experience that arises when the structures that we've created around us for security, stability and meaning begin to break down, or are seen in their limiting or limited nature. And when we really see into that, when we see the kind of limitations of our views, the limitations of the way we've lived our life, this can be deeply disturbing, can be deeply challenging. But it's ultimately, of course, it's liberating. It's liberating to really feel that potential, that edge between things as they have been and things that could be. And I thought, just to start this talk, I'd just mention a short episode from the life of the Buddha. So the Buddha had left home. Well, he was actually the Buddha to be. He wasn't enlightened, but he was searching. He was on a quest, on a journey. And what happened was that he was with following various teachers in northern India, wandering with them, taking up their practices, engaging with them as fully as possible. And the practices at that time were mainly very austere ascetic practices. And the one that he was involved in this episode, was really, it's around starvation. At that time, it was seen that if you persecuted the body, eventually the essence of being would be somehow mysteriously released. That the true nature would be released from this the limitations of the human body. So the Buddha had been involved in these for 7 years. So apparently at that time, if you saw him, and the sun was behind him, you could actually see the sun shining through his body. He was so emaciated. And at this point in this story, he'd got down to a river to wash himself. And as he was standing in the water, even though the current wasn't particularly strong, he could feel the weight, the persistence of the water drawing him, dragging him away from the bank. And he recognised that in any moment he was going to be swept away and he would die, and that all that striving, all that struggling was going to come to naught in a kind of muddy river in northern India. He was going to die. So he managed to struggle his way itself back to the bank, got out, lay on the ground completely exhausted, on the kind of verge of death. And at that point, a cowherder was passing, and the Buddha-to-be realised actually what he really needed in this moment was some food. So he was offered, he was given some rice, some bread, and he ate. And as he ate, all the his followers, because he was such skilled in this self-punishment, he had gathered a great number of followers around him. And they saw him eating, and in that moment, as he sat there taking in some rice and curds, apparently, all his followers just thought he'd given up. They deserted him. So he was left completely alone. And he was sat there alone, and he didn't know what he was going to do. He had no idea what the next move was. He just knew that the way he'd been going, the journey of his life, was limited. It was unfruitful. So he had to find another way, another way to move forward. So he has arrived at this place in himself where he completely knew where he'd got to was not right, but he didn't know where to turn next. And that cusp is what we describe as spiritual death. We really haven't got a clue what's going to happen next in a way. We're completely open to it, but we don't know. We've died at all our old ways of doing things. We've seen through them. They're not working for us. And we're on that edge. So I've been talking about the Buddha, but of course that's... we've probably all had those experiences to some extent. In fact, I suggest that's probably why we're here. Why all of us are here, because at some point we have this sense that something challenges us to change our life. Something has brought us to disturbed us, disrupted our normal way of our normal strategies. They become redundant in some way, and we have to seek some way forward. Now, of course, it doesn't have to be a painful experience. Just want to include that it might be that something was just too beautiful. Something was just too much, in a way. It was kind of overwhelming in its beauty. So the classic thing is, well, falling in love. Falling in love can be such a devastating experience, in the sense that everything, we had this nice little safe structure in place, and then we fall in love. And it just starts to really challenge, really starts to make us question where we are, what we've been doing with our life. So that's just wanted to say that, although I use the example of the Buddha, which is obviously a very kind of painful place, it can also be beauty, can be real kind of tasting something perhaps in nature, that we just want, we can long to find a way of responding or bringing that more fully into our life. So I just want a little bit of warning here. So when we meet these crises, one response is to try to rebuild ourselves, to put ourselves back as we were before the event happened. And this, so rather than sort of allowing our new life to emerge out of this state of unknowing, we try to impose a predetermined system back onto our experience. So we try to kind of look around and find the bits that used to work, that used to fit for us, and kind of rebuild them or kind of attach things in a way that actually isn't really coming out of this state of unknowing. It's more kind of trying to regurgitate the old. And if we do that, well, we're creating a really unstable base to work from. So particularly that is true when we come to meditation and Buddhism. So Buddhism is not about trying to stabilise the status quo. It's not about trying to create a fantasy of a particular way of being that we can kind of lock onto ourselves or kind of pick up and take on as an identity. So Buddhism isn't about stabilising anything. It's actually far more radical than that. It's far more powerfully real. It challenges us, Buddhism challenges us, each of us, to become more deeply who we are in our potential. It begins to challenge every preconception, every view, every aspect of our identity. So this is challenging. Just as life is challenging, the spiritual life really requires fearlessness, creativity, patience and kindness. And if we have those qualities, then when real change arises, even though it's disturbing, it's disruptive, well, we have something to sort of lean back into. And it's actually why we have a Buddhist centre. It's why we have community. It's why the Buddha shared his own experience of his enlightenment. He shared it so that it would be a benefit, a support to others in the future, his disciples and those that followed him, to actually be able to bear this bear spiritual death. This is what why we're here, why these classes are here, and why the Buddha taught. So Buddhism really is a path for warriors. So the warrior aspect is that we really challenge ourselves not to turn away from facing our own death. So this isn't the death, I'm not talking about the death ultimately of the death of when this body decays, stops functioning, that death. But it's actually the death, the numerous small deaths that will do arise through practice. Well, that do arise in countless moments of our daily life. It may be in very short meetings, or it may be in whole long episodes of transition, confusion. So what Buddhism is trying to do is really to try to get us to turn towards these points of potential death. And this is always present, actually. We always have the opportunity to turn towards spiritual death. So it happens in every meeting, in every conversation, in every meditation practice. There's these small moments where we just feel ourselves sort of gripping or trying to grip. Usually it's a futile exercise, but we're trying to grip onto a particular way of being, or trying to present ourselves in a particular way, or trying to get the world to respond as it should, as it ought to. And it doesn't. and that kind of how difficult, painful that is. So we're meeting this the whole time. So it can be really useful to notice this process of where we're resisting or engaging openly in life. So with the support and the energy of integration and positive emotion, we have this opportunity. We've been offered this opportunity to really turn towards this discomfort, maybe just a sense, a vague sense of unease. But we are able to turn towards it. And by turning towards, then we discover we really are on the edge of something. We're on the edge of life and death. And that we can really feel, as we kind of sense into our experience, the extent that we're either gripping or just softening and welcoming in this kind of the new life, this new way of being that wants to emerge through us in our potential. So the reason for this talk really is this evening is to really encourage you to open to this aspect of practice, so that we can work with our own death in these kind of numerous small ways that are arising all the time. This ability to learn how to move towards our experience, to turn towards experience rather than turning away or just drifting, becoming vague, switching off. And the more we can turn to, the more we skillfully make space for new life. This really allows, this process of death to progress, to mature us. And I think we also need to include that this process of turning towards is hard work. It's tiring. So, and it can make can come too much on occasions. It makes us too vulnerable, too raw. So we need to be able to negotiate that ability to turn towards, but also the ability to really look after ourselves, even to withdraw, so that we can absorb the impact of practice, so that we can take time to reflect, just to settle where we've got to so far. If we're constantly trying to open, it's too much. That's my experience. So we have to learn how to negotiate that, and that's part of positive emotion, of really learning the art of how much can I bear, how open can I bear to be. And knowing when we need to resource ourselves in different ways. I timed this, I thought it was going to take 35 minutes. There you are. It'll take what it takes, I'm afraid, tonight, because I want to say all that I'm going to say. So we'll have to see where we get to. Okay, so what I've been talking about so far is actually working with spiritual death on a conscious level, just constantly turning towards our experience. But sometimes we don't have that luxury. Sometimes we're simply thrown into a crucial situation completely unexpectedly. There may be something has happened to us, a loss, an end of a relationship, as I've talked about already, love, these things that kind of crash in on our experience Or it's not something we can kind of prepare for, really. So we're thrown into these places of uncertainty, of vulnerability and fear. So it's really valuable to have resourced ourselves to with the kind of practices of integration and positive emotion, so that we have been able to learn about this gentle art of turning towards, to be able to come alongside our experience with kind awareness, to bear these difficult periods in our life. So I think one of the things I want to just emphasise before moving on is that although spiritual death can feel really uncomfortable, even painful, often making us feel vulnerable, disorientated, confused, what would be useful, I think, to remember is that these processes are actually making way for a new life, making what they're actually revealing to us is actually very positive. Spiritual death is actually revealing the extent that we have deepened in our spiritual understanding, that actually we're more in accord with reality. I think this is really important, so I'm hoping you know that actually it's not actually about just the kind of the pain and the discomfort. It's actually, the fact is that these things only arise because we've had some understanding. We've gained some insight in our experience, which is causing this kind of breakdown in the status quo. So it's actually something to be celebrated. It might not feel like that in the moment, but actually these periods of change, these small moments, are actually really important markers of a very positive experience that is arising in us. Because spiritual death is more and more seeing things as they really are. And it's sometimes described that this spiritual death is really seeing through the magician's illusions. The illusions are being shattered. These kind of conjuring tricks that we've been so captivated by, somehow, for whatever reason, just no longer hold us. They don't do it anymore. We're looking for something more meaningful. Ultimately, what spiritual death is actually, it's seeing clearly into the way we fabricate a sense of identity, solidity and permanence. And we're doing this in the flux, in the reality of change and conditionality. What we do over and over again is that a new set of conditions arise and we become attached to them. We try to make them something solid and stable. So a part of our life has happened, given us some kind of sense of a personal history, a personal identity, and we say, that is who I am. But as soon as we do that, well, we have to do it provisionally, because we have to function in the world, function in relationship. But actually what happens is that we forget that that's just a provisional structure, and we become fixed or overly attached to a particular sense of ourselves. And what spiritual death is really, it just cuts through that. Forget it. It's just a temporary illusion that gives us a sense of security and stability, but it is only temporary. When we see, the more we see into this kind of attachment to views, attachment to fixing ourselves in some way, and the world, we recognise the extent to that, how much that causes us our suffering. When we're trying to grip onto being in a particular way, inevitably that means that we rub up against other people, because they tend to not operate in the same way all the time. They are fluid as we are. But if we try to fix other people in relation to us and ourselves, then we just create more and more suffering, I'm afraid. It's a very humiliating and painful reality. So this process to attachment to limited views creates suffering. And the more we release from that, the more liberation becomes a possibility. And this releasing ourselves from limiting views is liberating. It's life-giving. It's the goal of practice, really, to release from views. And this releasing, this constant releasing from views, is actually the most heroic thing we can do with our lives. It's the most challenging. It requires the most fearlessness. But this is the task of Buddhism, really, to just constantly keep releasing from any kind of limited perspective. So I'm just going to end by trying to point to this kind of theoretical experience. I know it's not theoretical, but point to this experience in a way that I hope might be useful. And I'm going to do this by talking, just referring to three terms that comes from the writings of James Hillman. Now, James Hillman, I personally think, is an amazing thinker. He's a psychologist, archetypal psychologist. I think he's a great writer. And he wrote this amazing book called Alchemical Psychology. And in this book, he's describing really poetically, insightfully, the whole dynamics of the spiritual life, the spiritual journey. And he uses the imagery of alchemy to discuss this journey. So it's not a Buddhist. He's not a Buddhist. He's what he is, really. Anyway, he's a Jungian therapist. And the terms that I really want to mention tonight are three terms. So there's putrefaction, salting, and beheading. And these terms, I think they're just fantastic. As kind of, they really capture, I think, the essence of spiritual death. So just to say, one of the great things about Hillman is that he says there is not one meaning to any event or any symbol. It's very much dependent on our perspective, on our attitude, on our understanding of any experience. And through that, we either make our experience life-affirming or life-denying. And I think that kind of that flexibility to the facts of our life are very important. So I think that the word putrefaction, for instance, that's quite a strong word, really. And it can have these two qualities, these two aspects to it. So let's have a look at putrefaction. So putrefaction is the breaking down. It's the dissolution of any fixed system of shape. It's this sense of the form that we've relied on beginning just to dissolve, fall apart. And this is a really necessary part of the process. The process of falling apart is crucial to the spiritual life. So we lose our bearing, and the structures of certainty and reasoning, all that we relied on in the past, have become begin to putrefy into this state of unknowing, the state of uncertainty and darkness. But also, putrefaction is really revealing to us that something is moving. It's the whole process of rotting down is an incredible life-affirming process. It's what makes the space for the new seed, the new growth, to grow through. So it's a very natural process, and it's a very affirming process. So to really see this space of precious fluidity that is arising in us, to really kind of see it from that perspective, can really support us to bear, to be in a state of putrefaction, to really allow ourselves to rot, to dissolve, is seen to be, well, it is fruitful if we can bear it. It's actually the way that our life can begin to move into the next phase. We can't know the nature of this process. We can't really kind of foresee the plant, the life that's going to emerge out of that stage. So we have to really trust to bear with this quality, this state of putrefaction. And not see it that there's something wrong with us. That we are kind of, we failed in some way. It's actually a really fruitful experience if we can approach it from this, in this way. And of course we need to bear this. We need to be able to hold this experience in the container of love, of care, of kindness. This is why it's so crucial to develop the art of the metta, metta-bhavana practice. To really be kind towards ourselves in these periods of putrefaction. Because otherwise we either become overwhelmed or we become over-identified and lost in a particular experience. So the metta, this positive emotion, really creates enough space for us to breathe within the practice, within the experience. So metta is not actually a specific experience, but it's a quality to awareness itself. So metta infuses our attention. It supports us to turn towards that which is unbearable. It allows us to turn towards our own dissolving and to be to make space for this new life that is emerging through that process. So the next quality, is salting. So salting, well, salt is a preservative. And one of the things it does, it really cleans out wounds. And it stings. It hurts. But also, salt really brings out the flavour to experience. And salt dries things out. It thickens things which becomes too fluid, too amorphous. So salting, in relation to spiritual practice, what that's doing is it really brings out the flavour that is here in our experience. So we add salt to our experience, and that salting, so that we can really taste the experience. Too much salt on our wounds, and they sting and burn us. We become overwhelmed. Too little salt, and everything, we just become indifferent to experience, indifferent to our practice, our spiritual life. So the art of salting our experience is seen to be really crucial for allowing us to make use of it, to differentiate really what is happening. And what salt does, it starts to dry out this flow of decomposition. It starts to bring out the subtle underlying flavours to the experience of decomposition, of putrefaction. So really salting, reflecting, sitting with is the kind of the way that we make use of these difficult experiences, these overwhelming experiences. Salting is giving time for reflection. Salting is preserving the lessons of our spiritual death for the life to come, for our future benefit. So we're making use of these kind of processes that we find ourselves within. Finally, we come to beheading. So beheading, that's this sensation of being beheaded by life, really. What do I mean by that? Well, it could be some tragedy, some illness, natural disaster, the blow of love, the blow of beauty. And it's as if we're fragmented, we're kind of blown apart in the experience. So we can't seem to function as we did. Our kind of life doesn't quite fit somehow. So this is the kind of sense that, it's all a bit become difficult to manage. Ordinary life can feel rather remote or meaningless. We might feel a bit alienated from our own experience, alienated from those around us. So this is the kind of the difficult aspect of feeling beheaded, that this kind of, we just cut away, really. We can't function. But it can also be an ally in this really difficult phase of spiritual death. So what happens in the beheading process is that we become more vividly aware of the different parts of our being. So this beginning to separate out and differentiate the different parts of ourself, we can start to see that this sense of I, of me, comes out of a whole range of different experiences. That this kind of imaginary I is actually a series of fragments, really. We have these different parts of ourselves, and some will still be putrefying, but there will be parts of us that are still able to care, that are able to feel love, patience, relieving and stabilizing in this process of change. The main thing that happens through this is that we notice that awareness itself remains throughout all these processes. Awareness itself remains unaffected. So the attention that we give to this apparently fragmented nature remains unaffected, unchanging. So the separating out of the different parts, our head, our body, and awareness itself. And we begin to recognise that awareness itself is actually completely open. Awareness itself is completely unbounded, unlimited in any way. Awareness simply meets changing experience as it is. Each time we do this in meditation, whatever the object is that we are focusing on, that quality of awareness, it's just awareness. It's just meeting arising experience. So we're becoming beheaded, we can begin to differentiate, to separate out the arising experiences from the awareness within which these experiences are arising and fading. And in this way we begin to rely more and more on awareness itself, rather than being identified with any of these fleeting sensations arising within it. And we begin to recognize that the clear sky of awareness is not different from the arising sensations within awareness itself. They are a piece, they are a whole. The clear sky permeates all experience and is the true nature, the true source of all arising experience. And in that real knowing, the source, the root of spiritual death is revealed. So what I hope this evening is that just laid out some useful territory that will help us all, help me, help you, move into spiritual death when you are touched by it. I hope you'll be able to even embrace it, celebrate it as a vital aspect of growth and maturation. I hope this talk, as I've said tonight, really helps you turn towards your own precious life. And reach out into this community. Make use of this community to support your practice, to support this process of spiritual death. Reach out to the Buddha. Reach out to his teachings. But also, well, primarily, reach out ever more fully into open, agenda-free awareness itself.